new CBS Monday.
Federal agents!
Hands where we can see them.
NCIS Hawaii is back. New criminals to catch.
Armed robbery, aggravated assault, murder.
And new investigations to be solved.
These guys were good, but even masters make mistakes.
Vanessa Lachey and featuring LL Cool J.
Violin Island, you got it.
Welcome to paradise.
A new NCIS Hawaii, Monday, 10, 9 central on CBS and streaming on Paramount+. Plus.
Get fired up.
Oh, yeah.
Performance-enhancing audio.
This is the State of Combat Podcast with Brian Campbell.
Hey, wait a minute. That's BC's line. Listen, everybody. It's your boy, Sugar Rashad Evans. And your boy, BC, is out on vacation with his family after his birthday last week. And hopefully he's having a good time because I know he's missing being here with you all. As you know, this is our weekly breakdown. And today we have a special guest, one of my good friends, one of my brothers in training, Tyrone Spung, who is absolutely a legend in the fight game. When you're talking about an athlete who has done it all from mixed martial arts to kickboxing to now currently boxing, you're speaking of one in Tyrone Spung, who has made his transition from kickboxing to boxing. And, you know, now light heavyweight Latino champion and just, you know, former WFCA cruiserweight champion, glory champion, so many champions, so many accolades. I can be here all day naming everything you've done. Tyrone Spung, say what's up to the people.
Good morning. What's up, guys? Thank you for having me. It's an honor. Looking forward to breaking down some stuff with you guys and I like the introduction, brother. I love it.
I mean, listen, it's not what my boy BC, Brian Campbell, gives me on a normal basis, but I try to do my best. Now, Tyrone, we haven't, you know, spoke to you on this podcast yet. How have you been doing with everything that's been going on? What's been going on? What's new with you?
With the whole pandemic situation, I deal with it okay because I'm a guy who likes to be at home with the family, with the animals, and work on the yard. So that on itself hasn't changed much. The fact that the gyms are were closed for a long time, and we have a threat now that it might be going back to that. That is something that's frustrating. The traveling, restrictions, it's also unclear right now. And that's something that makes it very, frustrating. The fact that, not any fight shows are getting put up, you know, only the UFC is doing that at the moment. But right now, you see some light at the end of the tunnel because some promoters are going to start putting up events. But it's hard. And I don't, you know, not just for myself, but I feel for all the other fighters that are not with either the UFC or another big promotion that's willing to put up the money for the testing, the flights, etc. Because it adds up.
Yeah, it does, man. I think the UFC's done a good job as just being the pioneers out there, you know, pretty much showing everybody how to handle an athletic event, you know, dealing with this pandemic and everything that has to do with testing. But we can jump back into boxing a little bit later on. Right now, let's get into the last fight on the fight card on Fight Island, Whitaker versus Till. Great main event. A lot of back and forth action. You know, it was really a game of inches in this fight. We did see Whitaker get the nod, and, you know, I definitely agree with that decision. But it was definitely a great contested fight by Darren Till. I felt as if, like, he gave a good representation for himself. But I felt like he was just missing when it came to just initiating more offense. I felt like he played the counter game a little bit too long, and it allowed Robert Whitaker to get into his movement. His rhythm, which inevitably ended up costing Darren Till the fight.
Yeah.
Tyrone, what'd you see?
I thought the fight was very interesting, especially for the former champ Robert to come back after a loss against a very dangerous and game opponent in Darren Till. You could see that Robert himself was a little bit gun shy as well, a little hesitant. I would love for him to, you know, I have a habit that when I look at fighters, I wish that I could, you know, give my input on that. I wish that I was in the corner, and if I was in his corner at that moment, I would advise him to put it more together. Don't count on the one heavy shot. He was thrown heavy letter, but you know, I would like to have him use a little bit more feints on his part. And Darren, yeah, he was doing good the first round, but the second round he got clipped, and from that moment he got very careful, because you know, you got to respect Robert's power. But it was a very entertaining fight, and I agree with the win. Robert did good, and I guess this brings him back into title contention.
Yeah, I thought that Darren Till did a really good job of being a counter striker, but I felt as if, like, you know, he waited a little bit too long, and he was getting the right angle, because you've seen, you know, he was softball versus traditional fighter. So sometimes you'll see him get perfect angle where he'll just crack that straight left hand down the middle. And then before Robert Whittaker can adjust to get off the line, it was like Darren Till already knew where he was going, and he started firing that uppercut right at the perfect timing. So Darren Till did show that he did, you know, had the counter strike in to come up with, you know, not one combination, but with two great punches. But when it came to just like dictating the fight as far as, you know, from an offensive standpoint, I just felt like he never really got into it. It felt as if, like, and this is a great fight. Like I've seen, like I talked to a lot of fighters about fakes and feints and the importance of fakes and feints. If you want to break down and you want to teach somebody the importance of fakes and feints, I think this right here is a perfect example. Fight to show anybody, perfect yeah. example, because you have both of these fighters who fought tremendously, and it was all predicated basically on who was going to win the game of the fakes. Both of these guys are amazing fakes and feigners, and it was just a clinic of both of that, and we've seen Robert Whittaker come out with the edge, but Darren Till was definitely had him in his bag with some of those fakes and feints he did.
Yeah, I mean, Darren is still a young athlete. I think he's only 27 now, or 28, something like that. He has time to work, but he definitely proved that he's up there, and he has the right to be there. I think that Darren should use a little bit more of his jab. His movement, he's very fast for that weight as well. You could see that every time Robert tried to counter, he was out of there. Like you said, it seemed like he knew what Robert was going to do, but that was just mainly also because of his speed and his reading ability of his opponent. And with Robert, I think, you know, Robert is amazing. He was the champ for a reason. He did very well. I like the oblique kicks that he used as well. There's been some complaints about that, you know, but I mean, we're in the
that oblique kick that he threw. It actually messed up Darren Till's knee to the point where he thought he may have, like, have blew out an ACL or had some serious damage to the knee. And that's something that with the oblique kick has been talked about when John Jones is using it. A lot of people are like, yo, we shouldn't be, you know, allowed to use those because it can end somebody's career. But then at the same time, I mean, we are in a hurt business. We're trying to hurt each other, you know?
Yeah, you know, we it's not something that's illegal. I mean, you know, you got to try to do everything to have an advantage and win the fight. You know, I don't think that Robert wanted to, you know, purposely hurt Till to a point that he ends his career. He just, I just want to hurt you to a point that I win my fight, you know, and I think that's the same mindset that Robert had in there.
Yeah. So what do you think is next for Robert Whittaker, who just challenged for the title and now had one bounce back fight? Do you think the next best fight for him is another crack at the title, or do you think another contender like Cannonier or Hermanson should be somebody that is better for him?
I would like to see him against Cannonier. Honestly, he needs to work on his on his arsenal, to be honest, because we're talking about the champ, Israel Adesanya, and he's such a well-rounded fighter at the moment. You know, there were some games about his takedown defense and his ground game, but look what he did. He became a champion in such a rapid time, and at the same time, he fought Joel Romero, who was probably one of the best wrestlers in the whole UFC, and he came out the champ, victorious. I don't think if I was Robert's advisor or manager, I wouldn't take this fight too soon again. You know, I would I would fight against Cannonier, get some rounds in, work on my skill set, and then after that challenge for the title again.
Yeah, I agree, man. I think when I watch Whittaker, I love what he does. I love what he does. But one thing that's been one of his calling cards that has helped him, but now I think it's kind of in a place where it can go either way, is his blitzing style. His blitzing style has got him to be a champion and has brought him so far along the way. But now I think that everyone is starting to catch on to it. And I think the Israel Adesanya fight was the one where people started to really understand the timing of his blitzing and how to counter it. So now his blitzing is something that's being countered easy. But I think the problem with his blitzing is not so much of the blitz itself. It's where he is after he finishes with the blitz. You know, defensively speaking, responsibly, he's not. You know, he ends off, you know, on the power side, with his head on the power side of the blitz. You know, and it should be on the other side. It should be on the weak side of the blitz. So that way the guy has to change his feet around.
I want to cut in there. It's just that style, seeing that Israel is coming from a kickboxing background, it's just too simple. You know, it's just a little bit too simple for Israel Adesanya. He can read that very quickly. You know, and the reason is because he has faced so many different strikers in his previous career in kickboxing. So it simplifies it for him in MMA. I mean, it's too simple. The attacks that Robert attacks with, it's just too simple for him, and he reads through them. And the fact that Robert is blitzing is not that bad. It's actually a really good trade, especially with the small gloves in MMA. But the thing is, you got to get out of the way after that. And that's something that I didn't see in his last fight. But I'm a big fan of Robert. I like him, not only as an athlete, as a fighter, but as a human being. I like how he conducts himself, you know, in his interviews and everything. Very likable guy, but very vicious inside of the octagon. So I'm rooting for him, but I would, as his manager or advisor, I wouldn't take the Adesanya fight. That was his last fight before the Darren Till fight, and to jump back right into it, it doesn't give you the time to change up whatever is lacking, and it's going to be the same result, in my opinion.
Yeah, and also that fight was so emotionally charged. It almost ruined the fight game for Robert Whittaker, because as you know, you've been along with me when you have those big fights, and you've even had those big emotional fights where you're going against your rival, you know, and it just takes so much out of you on a level, and to lose to your rival, it takes a lot to put the wind back in your sails to say, you know what, let me try this again. You know, after the whole fallout happened, Robert Whittaker had problems with his, you know, his coaching staff and everything, where he was just, you know, talking to him about the fact that he didn't feel like he was able to communicate effectively in order to get the best out of his performance, you know. And that's something that happens once you climb the top and you face the best guys. You know, you go through that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, the thing is, in a situation like that, to stay calm at all times and not let your emotions overrule. And that's why I think that it would give him some time to work on his skill set, work on a tactical plan for the Adesanya rematch. I mean, because it's going to come down the pipeline anyways. You know, he's the champion. Robert is the number one contender. On paper, he should get the next shot for the title. But as his team and with the UFC and everything, I would have him fight one other contender, work on my skill set, work on my game plan, and my arsenal, sharpen my tools, and get back in there calm and collective. And that's one of the biggest thing that Robert always had, is that he's super calm. You see how he conducts himself. He doesn't think about, you know, the opponent and the rivalry that much. But you could see that the fight with Adesanya, that it got under his skin. And yeah. He was a little bit too emotional, overextended himself, overcommitted. And that's what led to the result of that fight.
Yeah, so now we have Darren Till. Darren Till had a wasn't a bad performance at all, I think, by Darren Till. I just felt as if, like I said before, he just waited a little bit too long. But not to dive into what he didn't do right any, you know, much longer. What do you see next for Darren Till, who is a fan favorite, who is kind of finding his way at middleweight? You know, he's a struggled for the longest time to make 170, but now at middleweight, he's looking like this is like he should have made this move a long time ago. Not only on a physical basis, but just on a mental basis, it looks as if like he's having fun again.
Correct. You know, he lost this fight against the former champ, which is not a shame. I think Darren should just take on all comers. He proved that, you know, Robert Whittaker is arguably one of the most dangerous men in the division, and he just lost a close fight to him. So that means that you should just get as many fights in as possible if you want to become the champ, and that's ultimately everybody's goal.
Absolutely, man. And I think that like you said, man, it's just chipping away at the top and just making sure that you stay relevant. As far as next challenges with him, you know, you we have so many ways you can go with him, just because of the simple fact that he's one of those guys where, you know, he's building himself at the division, but at the same time, he's such a fan favorite and exciting. It's going to be exciting to see what they do with Darren Till. But before we break down the rest of the fights, let's take a quick break to hear our friends and sponsors.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss, 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does, 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we are back to finish breaking down the fights at Fight Island. We move to the co-main event with Shogun and Little Nog. And this one was one for the ages, Tyrone. It was...
Oh, my God. This is a fight that these guys have been battling each other 2 decades, bro.
Yeah, it was a great fight, man. Both of these guys, we knew coming in this fight, you know, they both didn't have a lot of tread on their tires. But we did know one thing, that they saved enough tread for each other.
Yes.
And it was a great fight. You know, Nogueira, many would say over the hill, but what he showed in that fight was just, you know, that he still has the power. The power is the last to go. And yeah. even the caginess, the smartness in the cage, he fought very well as well. I mean, very well. You know, these are guys who they're fast twitch and their I guess their athleticism has been eroded away a little bit just by the battles that they had in the cage. But it's good to see that it was a fun fight for the fans.
Yeah, you could see the experience in Nogueira. Every time he got rocked or he needed a breather, he was moving along in the octagon, taking his distance. That left hand, oh my God, it cracked Shogun a few times, blew up his eye, hurt him bad, wobbled him a few times. This fight was much closer than the other fights. See going either way, but you know, I could live with the decision. It was very entertaining, and it's nice to see that the guys showed that even at their age. You know, I mean, Lil Nog is 44 if I have it right, and he still put on 3 rounds of action and excitement. So it was a very, very entertaining fight for these guys.
It really was, man. It really was. But now, I mean, it's to the point now. I mean, we've seen them both go. I mean, Shogun is a younger guy. I think he's like a 38 or 37 years old, but he's got so much wear on him. But I mean, is it time, Tyrone? I mean, I know we don't like to say this as fighters ourselves, but is it time, you think?
Oh, for Shogun? Or
for either of them.
I mean, you know, look, I do think that you could, myself, because I'm looking not as just an analyst, I'm looking as a competitor at the same time. And you see that old man movement. Yeah, that's a little stiff in the legs and everything. You could see it a little bit more with Lil Nog. I mean, if you match him up against a young lion, he's gonna get hurt. You know, yeah. the reaction time is a little slower. But you know, these guys have done so much for the company. If they want to keep competing, match them up accordingly, and they can keep going a little bit more. But right now, if I would have put Lil Nog against Anthony Rumble Johnson or somebody else in the 205, yeah, that moves Anthony Smith. I mean, that's just asking for trouble, in my opinion. You know, you gotta match these guys up accordingly. I mean, that's what you want as a promotion anyways. You want to entertain the fans. So, you know, and these guys proved that they can entertain the fans because everybody was ecstatic about the fight. So give them the right fights against the right opponents. Don't have them go on till the 50-something in MMA. That's just not, you know, realistic. I do think it's time, you know, but at the same time, they can keep going if they're being matched up accordingly, which they proved last night.
Yeah, that's so true, man. I think the matching up accordingly is a key to when you have these older fighters, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Like you said, the legs are the first to go. When you notice the spring in the legs, you notice how them legs just don't bounce the way they used to. Even when they get hit, they kind of dance a little more.
In your mind, but the legs are like, hold up, I'm not going anywhere. you know? So,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah. All right, let's move along down the card here. Werdum versus Gustafsson. Now, going into this fight, I had a lot of faith in my boy Gustafsson. I just knew that he was the missing link to the heavyweight division. I thought he was going to be the one to bring the heavyweight division into a prominence like we see the 155 division or the 170 division, meaning in the fact that there was going to be a lot more competition coming to the heavyweight division. And I thought Gustafsson was that guy. I mean, he's got great amateur boxing skills. Not only that, he has great ability to take a guy down when he decides. He has great takedown defense. He has great grappling. He's a black belt in jiu-jitsu. I mean, he has all the trimmings. He has all, he not only that, he has the size. He has every single thing that would just make him be that guy at heavyweight. And especially now that he went up and he doesn't have to cut that weight anymore. And now he can finally just be. And you know what it is to just be as a fighter, just wake up and just eat what you want to and then go and train. It's a vacation. It's lovely. Yep. It's a place where you want to be. So I was happy he got to that place, but I was just disappointed with what I seen. I just didn't see the Gustafsson that I thought I was going to see. I mean, for the most part, even on the feet, I felt as if like his jab, it was fast, but it wasn't as clean as it needed to be. I felt like it could have been clean. I felt like it should have been cleaner. I felt like his jab just was not that clean because you seen him with the right arm when he was throwing it, you know, it was kind of like bow and arrow a little bit.
Yeah.
And then when he got taken down, he you got to know when Fabrizio gets you on the ground, you gotta do everything in your power to get back up. There is no grappling with Fabrizio. I rolled with Fabrizio a few times, and every single time he got a hold of me, it was like he's going to find a tap. He's going to find a way to get it, man. So
he is. It's a wrap. Once you go to the ground with Fabrizio, it's a wrap. I mean, you know, I was maybe a little biased beforehand because I'm good friends with Fabrizio, but I'm going to keep it professional. I did think that Gustafsson could cause a lot of problems on the feet. Especially, like you said, with his boxing, he has very crisp hands, his jab. He proved it in the fight with Glover Teixeira, you know, the uppercut, his octagon IQ, the way he uses the cage, his grappling skills. He's just one of the first in a new generation of a complete MMA fighter. But at the same time, you have to keep in mind that, you know, even though this is probably his natural weight and he doesn't have to cut, you got to get used to competing, going into battle with this exact weight, because he, his whole career, he fought at 205. Mm-hmm. You know, this was his first fight at heavyweight. And to do it against a very dangerous opponent in Fabrizio, I probably think that they made a mistake. You know, they watched Fabrizio's last performance and they thought that was, you know, he was either done, washed up or whatever, but he proved them wrong.
I mean, wait, Tyrone Hoyt, not for nothing though. He did get outstruck by possibly the worst strikers in the heavyweight division. And Alexei Oleinik. I mean, nothing against Oleinik. I love his style. I love his Ezekiel choke. His striking is just not nowhere near the level.
You probably have to keep it professional. I can say it. His striking is trash. That's what you want to say.
Yeah.
So that's what it is. But at the same time, we were just that. That's a lot of people don't know it. But I spoke to Fabrizio during the camp, and he was training by himself with his brother, who was not his normal pad holder, doing just pads and running a little bit. He had no sparring. It was his first fight back after a long suspension. So, you know, he was rusty as hell. And you gotta understand that Fabrizio is up there in age as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, for him, at that age, after a very, very long suspension, coming back, not a real camp. Then you have to deal with the nerves and everything before a fight, going against there. And, you know, Olenek has a style that makes everybody look a little ugly, you know.
Yeah,
so
I know.
It's just a very sloppy, gritty style of fighting. And Fabricio, you know, he didn't look good. But now Fabricio had a proper camp. He was with his old coach, Ravel Cordero, and they looked amazing. I mean, was his last fight on his contract, so he's a free agent now. What a better way to go out.
That was a great way to go out, because being 44 years old, and even listening to what Dana was talking about when a few times he was asked about Fabricio and him being on his last fight. And, you know, Dana gave pause because he was like, you know, Fabricio, he's getting up there, you know. So that wasn't the sign or the sound as if, like, you know, we're going to sign him again. You know what I'm saying? Especially after with the way he fought. And honestly speaking, I don't even know how Dana's and Fabricio's relationship really is. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know if they're like Dana's in love with Fabricio. I know they've had their problems in the past or whatnot, but, it just didn't sound like Dana was too confident about, you know, about bringing him back if he was to lose his fight.
We can't forget Dana is a businessman. You know, yeah. if it's good business, it makes sense.
Yeah,
and you know, he's not in this to make friends. He's in this to do good business. And the way that Fabricio performed, Gustafsson went to war with John Jones twice. He went to war with DC.
Yeah.
I mean, and we're talking about DC, who was the heavyweight champion of the world. I mean, and the fact that he performed so well against these two guys. DC was former heavyweight champion of the world. John Jones is arguably one of the best, if not the best fighter in MMA ever. So for Werdum to finish a guy in the first round like that, I mean, it says a lot about Werdum.
Absolutely, it sure does. And I mean, just even a mindset, the mental mindset of being able to overcome after everyone said that you're out, and to do it. And listen, I mean, Fabricio's had a lot of fights, but fighting in this pandemic is different, you know, and just no crowd and you know, not having that familiar feeling that you've been used to your whole fighting career is now gone. You know, it's taking the most experienced as fighters and it's turning them into a novice, because it's just such a new dynamic. Not only do they have to get used to the new dynamic of competing in a quiet place, but then also, as you spoke about and you kind of touched upon, you know, Fabricio's last camp where he was trained by his brother, you know, they're not getting the team training in there in some places where they're not able to go to the gym. So we're seeing a different type of competing when it comes to these athletes competing in this pandemic, because it's not always about the X's and O's. It's about sometimes if you can just even find a good training schedule that means that you can get a good training camp in, you know?
To be honest, I kind of like this whole pandemic fighting. I think it brings back the origin of the fight game, which is two warriors going in there and duke it out, you know. And I kind of like that, you know. And just your focus is different. You got no distractions. Even though, you know, with the crowd, fighters perform great. Don't get me wrong, but you could always be distracted by something that happens in the crowd, something you see in the corner of your eye or whatever, and that's not there now. You could hear your coaches very clearly. One advantage is if you listen good, you could hear the other corner as well from your opponent.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's certainly different, but it's very attractive to fight in this pandemic, to be honest.
It is, man. It is. Let's move along. Let's move along here. So Habib, he said that he wants to retire at 30-0, and that's two more fights left before he retires. And it just came out that Khabib is going to fight Justin Gaethje. The fight has been announced for October 24th. So this is something that's pretty huge. I mean, we've been waiting in the wings to see when Khabib is going to make this fight happen, or when the fight's going to be able to happen, because he just lost his father, his main training partner, his main coach, and to COVID. So it's a very tough, trying time. It's been a very tough, trying year for Khabib. And, you know, my heart goes out to him. So it's exciting to see that a date is set. It's just one of those things that, you know, as a friend of Khabib or somebody who knows him pretty well, you know, I just have a heavy heart knowing that the person who he competes for is no longer with him. Yeah. And I know how it is to compete for a coach. You know, Michael Van Arsdale was the coach who I competed for. It didn't matter what happened. I competed for him. I just wanted to win for him. And when I didn't win for him, that was like a double loss for me, you know? Yeah. So I definitely can see that, man.
I mean, it's you know, life. And everything works in mysterious ways, my opinion. You know, we could be proof that nothing in the fight game can get to him, you know, and he built his legacy and everything. And it's going to be very interesting to see what kind of Khabib shows up with this huge missing link in his whole life, his career. Because we're not just talking about a coach. We're talking about his father, the man that gave him life, who, like you said, who is competing for, who is not going to be around for this fight in any shape or form because he's not here anymore. And, you know, I'm so intrigued. I loved his father. You know, I had the pleasure of talking to the father, working with the father. And making some wrestling moves with him, and just the mindset. The father was a real general, if you may say, you know, as a soldier, real warriors. And life throws this now at Khabib, so that we could see what he's made of, what kind of Khabib is going to show off, because he clearly proved that nothing in the fight game can get to him to break him, you know. So this is something that's only going to add more to his legacy if he comes out victorious against Justin Gaethje. I mean, it would be tremendous. I mean, it's kind of cruel and crazy for me to say, but that's really what it is, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you spoke about his legacy. There's one fight that's been talked about that kind of goes along with his two fights in out. One would be the Justin Gaethje. The other one, which was talked about before the Gaethje fight was solidified, is a fight between GSP and Khabib. I mean, that's something that Dana White himself said. I don't know. Obviously, he has his Gaethje fight that he has to get done. He said, but I mean, it's something that definitely can happen, you know. He said, no clue.
No,
I mean,
no. You, at first, Dana was not very much for it because you know, here came GSP. He beat Michael Bisping, became champ, and he walked away and he left the fish and champless. And, you know, Dana was like, what the hell? You come back, you win. I'm not going to give you a fight anymore. So the fight was kind of off the table. But now I think because this was his father's wish and a dream that Khabib had to fight GSP because they see him as the best ever, I think this just might be a reason for Dana and everybody in the UFC to say, you know what? This guy did everything he said he was going to do. He won it all. He became the champion. He can build an amazing legacy by fighting GSP. You know what? We're going to make the fight happen. And that is exactly what I think is going to happen.
Well, here's what Dana said, though. Here's what he said. So he said he's fighting Justin Gaethje next. Then I don't know who his last fight would be to make him 30. You know, I don't know. No clue. I mean, listen, at the end of the day, the Conor McGregor fight, I know Conor has always wanted to fight that fight since the last one. I mean, that is the fight to make. I don't know. Again, we will see how this all plays out. But the Gaethje fight is an absolute positively the next fight for him. So it sounds to me like in that wordplay that he was saying that, yeah, I mean, the GSP fight does sound good. But listen, at the end of the day, we got to make money. And right now, that GSP ain't over Conor McGregor for that last 30 fight, you know? So
that's the thing. I mean, Dana for sure is gonna think like, yo, let's break bank one more time against Conor. But you know, ultimately it's gonna be up to if Khabib and his team, which they will, because Ali Abdelaziz, who's Khabib's manager, is the best manager in MMA. He has a powerhouse. His stable full of, you know, just super athletes. I think if they play it right, which I think they will, they can demand that GSP fight, which will make stupid money as well. You know, it's all up to Khabib eventually, you know, if he wants to accept the Conor fight or not. He said that he wouldn't fight Conor again because that's his punishment for all the shit that Conor did and said. And you know, I honestly would stick with it. I would do that. I wouldn't give Conor the fight, you know.
And especially with Habib's father that passed, depending on how he felt about him fighting Conor again, it all depends if that fight is gonna happen again. So I don't know what that conversation was like. You know, if his dad said there's a no go with that fight, then that fight is not happening.
No-go. He's always going to honor his father's wishes. That's one thing that I know for sure.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. So, Tyrone, we're going to jump into some rapid-fire questions with Tyrone. We want to talk about – let's look forward to some of these boxing schedules, you know, for the rest of the year. You talked about some of these other events, other promoters starting to get off the ground in the beginning of the podcast. Let's take a look at some of these fights. First, starting August 1st, we have Stephen Fulton Jr. versus Angelo Leo. You know much about any of these guys?
I do, but I kind of know the schedule, and I want to.
Which one excites you the most out of the? So you have. Let me just read off the schedule. You have August. August 1st, Stephen Fulton Jr. versus Angelo Leo. August 15th, we have David Benavidez versus Romero. Angelo. And then we have Angulo. Is that Angulo?
Yes.
Yeah, Angulo. Then we have September 19th. You know Angulo, right? Don't you? You know Angulo, don't you?
Yeah. So that's definitely one of the fights that I look forward to because we actually started our boxing career at the same time. This is a huge, huge fight for him. He's fighting a very dangerous opponent, the champ. He's fighting for the title, and I'm rooting for Angulo. It's not going to be an easy test, very difficult fight, but I'm so proud to see him fighting for the world title now, and I'm definitely excited about that one, and I'm going to tune in and support my guy.
Absolutely. So what do you think about this a big fight got signed this weekend, Mike Tyson versus Roy Jones Jr. I mean, that's not for the pound for pound list by any means or any championship, but that's for a different kind of championship. That's for, I guess, for the fans. What do you think about that matchup?
Man, that fight blows almost everything else out of the water. I mean, you know, we're talking about Mike. We're talking about Mike and Roy Jones. This is going to be hard for me to watch, even though it's an exhibition fight. I know that, you know, these guys probably won't take it easy on each other. At least that's what I expect. And the crazy thing is I know both of them. I know both of the guys, and they're two of my just all-time favorites, you know. I love both of these guys so much, and for what they've done for the sport, and just them as humans. They're such interesting characters. Just, you know, once you hang around them, you talk to them, you want to know more about them. So for me, this is a fight that's just a fantasy fight coming to reality.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me get some rapid fire questions from you. I'm just going to ask you some questions and you kind of just give me like a little short answer. Okay, so the first question is going to be, who's your favorite boxer, kickboxer, MMA guy to watch?
Oh, this is difficult. I mean, my favorite boxers, I just said it. I can't pick one of them, you know, but it's Ali, Tyson, and Roy Jones.
Okay. How about kickboxing?
Kickboxing?
Yeah.
I got to take myself out. No, I'm just kidding. kickboxers, it has to be Ernesto Hoost and Rob Kamen.
Okay. How about favorite MMA guy to watch?
It has to be
Thank you, Tyrone. Rashad. I appreciate it.
It has to be Sugar Rashad Evans, Wanderlei Silva, and Fedor Emelianenko.
See, I was joking off. I was going to cut you off and just end the whole thing and to make it sound like you said it. But you were really going to save me. See, Tyrone, that's love, yes, right there. Yes, that's love. Right. Who is the best striker in MMA?
Oof, probably is going to be Israel Adesanya.
Okay, how about in the heavyweight division?
In the heavyweight division, I mean, most powerful striker is probably, you know, Francis Ngannou. And technically and powerful, I have to go with my boy Jairzinho Rozenstruik.
Okay. That's interesting. Okay. Who is your favorite boxer to watch currently?
Currently, it has to be in the heavyweight division. It's so hard, but I have to go with Joshua and Fury.
You said Fury?
Yeah, Tyson Fury.
Tyson Fury.
But overall, just in boxing, not just the heavyweight division, I got to go with Tank, Gervonta Davis.
Okay. What made you jump from kickboxing to MMA to now boxing? Like, why didn't you just say, you know what? I mean, why don't you say, you know what? MMA after kickboxing is where I want to stay at. What made you go to boxing? Would you maybe really go, Jackson?
No, I can't cuss on you, right? Because I can. Not everybody can do it, you know. It's a big transition. It's a challenge. When I first moved down here to Florida, all because of you and my other brother King Mo, who introduced me and made it possible. After a few months that I was down here, a few of the fight game reporters gave me the nickname the Bo Jackson of combat sports. And you know, at the time I was like, Bo who? I didn't know much about the history of Bo Jackson and what it stands for, but I found out, and it's a huge honor to be compared to Bo Jackson in that aspect. Not for the accomplishments or whatever, but just being able to adapt to another discipline like that. So, you know, I'm just living up to the hype and making it come true.
If you had one fight in the UFC, who would that be? In what division?
It had to be against John Jones.
It had to be against John Jones?
Yeah, because, you know, for the record, I got to set something straight. And he is probably one of the best ever to do it.
Yeah, he is. If you can fight one person in the past in their prime, who would it be? Ali, Frazier, Ernesto, who? Sammy Schilt, who would it be?
Sorry. You fell through a little bit.
I'm sorry.
Again?
If you could fight one person in their prime, mm-hmm. in the past, who would it be? Would it be Ali, Frazier, Ernesto, who's? Who would it be?
Man, it's crazy. I have so much respect for Ali, Mike Tyson, all those guys that I wouldn't even want to compete with them. And not because I don't think I can't win, because I don't want to win from them. Mm. You know, it's crazy for me as a competitor to say that, but that's how deep my respect goes for them. You know, I mean, they did what they did in their time, and they're the guys that paved the way for us. I'm just more looking forward to my own generation right now and the guys that are on top right now that I would want to be. You know, from the guys in the past, I'm thankful for what they did, you know, and I believe nobody could beat them. I believe nobody could beat Muhammad Ali, you know. I believe nobody could beat Mike Tyson. That's just, you know, how it is. But, you know, I think for the fans, it would be great to have me in my prime against Mike Tyson in his prime, because that would be one vicious fight, you know. But, you know, me, myself, you know, I respect those guys, and they did what they had to do to pave the way for us.
Yeah. What is your go-to meal after a fight?
Man, I like a good burger and fries. Burgers,
simple.
Burgers, fries, and a Coke.
All right. Who is the hardest puncher that ever hit you?
Who's the hardest punch?
Like, you just hit me like, ooh, this is different.
I accidentally hit myself one time. And I was like, damn! You got some. Who hit me? I was like, who? I was like, who? I'm surrounded. Who did that? No.
Oh my God.
Let me think. Man, you know, I had over 100 professional fights, bro. I've been hit a lot by good guys.
Yeah. That's a hard question to ask.
It's very hard to answer. Yeah. Who hit me the hardest? But I think it had to be Nathan Corbett. I mean, the guy hit me, and the punch, you know, like, normally I got dropped when he hit me. And normally when you get a punch and you drop, you don't remember anything. It's just like, okay, a flash knockdown.
Mm-hmm.
But boy, it hurt. It hurt. I was like, ow, and I was down, and it hurt. He hit vicious. He had a very strong punch. I probably had to say him.
Okay. So which one of your knockouts was your favorite knockout? Because I know my favorite knockout of yours, but which one is your favorite knockout?
Man, again, I got I got over 80 knockouts, brother.
I know.
I mean,
well, since you can't name one, I'll name my favorite knockout of yours. My favorite knockout of yours had to be the one where the guy comes out and he drops you in the first round of the kickboxing match we in New York City. And your coach is like, keep your hands up. He's like, yeah, I got this. And he comes out and he catches you with a right hand out the gate. And you come off the canvas so composed, we couldn't tell how rocked you is. But the guy swarmed you. And the next thing you know, you just chopped him down with an overhand right that just sent his soul right to hell.
He was gone. He was gone. I was like, nah, we ain't going out like that. We're in New York, baby.
Yeah, so
like that. I mean, that's one of the knockouts of myself that went viral. I mean, it's been a few years now, and every other few months it keeps popping up on every other big media outlet and goes viral. So I mean, that probably is one of the knockouts that the people like the most because of the excitement of me. I wasn't dropped. I slipped. I mean, he got me good with that punch, but it was more off balance thing, and that's the mistake he made. He thought I was very hurt, and he came out a little reckless, and that gave me the opening shot to land that Hail Mary on him.
That was a Hail Mary indeed. When can we expect to see you back in the ring, Tyrone?
You know me. I'm always game to fight. You know, we're in talks now, and trying to set up a fight. Hopefully, by end of the year now, how things are looking. We're gonna announce it once it's done, but. You know, it's frustrating and it's kind of demotivating because I've been doing this for such a long time. You don't want to I've been training my whole life, so I don't want to be training if I don't always have something set in stone. You know, yeah. I mean, it's not like I'm doing nothing, but I'm not going to be killing my body going all out if nothing is set in stone. But I'm maintaining now, and hopefully we'll have some news soon because a lot of people, you know, hit me up on my social media posting questions or when do you fight? We want you to fight this guy. We want you to fight that guy. And it seems people always like to see me fight whoever. They always want me to fight, man. So I hope that I could, you know, entertain my fans soon and put on an exciting performance for you guys.
Absolutely. We look forward to seeing you get back and get active again. Let's take a jump down to UFC Fight Night, Brunson versus Shabazzian, which is coming up this weekend back in Vegas to start off this series of fights. Derek Brunson versus Edmund Shabazzian. A great matchup. Shabazzian coming in with a lot of hype, 11-0. 22 years old, and this kid is phenomenal. There's no other way to say it. He can do it all. Striking is on point. His groundwork is on point. His grappling is on point. His transitions to each and every single different technique and different discipline is on point as well, too. His fight acumen IQ is all very sharp. This kid is looking like he could be the future, but he's got a very tough test in front of him against Derek Brunson.
You see, you fall for the hype. No, I'm saying that this sounds like we're talking about the new generation of complete MMA fighters. You know, back in the day, you had, and that was what was so compelling to the UFC because it was more something of style versus style. You know, we had a boxer coming in to the MMA cage. You had a karate guy. You had a wrestler. You had a Greco guy. You had a jiu-jitsu guy that each of them had to transit into MMA, learn striking, either learn grappling, learn wrestling. And this is one of the guys from the generation where they started off in the MMA discipline, doing everything. And that's what he is a result of. You know, he's a complete MMA fighter. Like you just said, you almost can't detect any flaws. His transition is good. His striking is good. His grappling is good. His fight IQ is good. So he's a very promising prospect. Again, I'm a guy that I come from the old school. So I don't, you know, to me, everything is hype until you prove it against a game opponent. And he finally has one now against Derek Brunson. Very explosive guy, Derek. Is a personal friend of mine. So I'm not going to try to be biased at all. I know it's a very dangerous fight for Derek. But, you know, simultaneously, it is a dangerous fight for his opponent as well. You know, we got to see, man. This is a young puppy, and I'm a good guy outside of the ring and the cage, but inside, I'm a bully, and that's exactly what I told Brunson. You know, you gotta go in there, and if he wants to play with the big dogs, welcome him. You know, give him hell, make him work. You know, he's never been here. And you know, just bully him, beat him up, you know, and make him pay for every mistake that he makes, because he's not experienced as you are. But at the same time, it's just going to be a very dangerous fight for Derek. But at the same time, it's a dangerous fight for Sabazi as well.
Yeah, Derek Brunson is 2-2 in his last four fights. His two prior to his last two wins that got him on his winning streak were two TKO finishes by Jacare in Israel. And we've seen the effects of those fights in the confidence after those fights. You know, it seemed like Derek struggled to get his confidence back again, you know, and it seemed since then, though, since since his fight back with, I guess, Theodoro, which was a fight where he struggled when, you know, it was an ugly fight, but Elias is a very hard fighter to fight. You know what I'm saying? He doesn't look as good as he actually is. And that's the hard part when you're fighting somebody like him, because you can get well frustrated just trying to beat him because you like,
he's like a smaller version of Olenek.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Like he just has one of those styles that give you some complications. So that was a fight to, you know, kind of get him back. But the fight against Ian Heinisch, where, you know, it was a good win against a tough opponent, he showed that he's back in a big way, and he showed that he's not gonna accept that role as just being a gatekeeper. And yeah. Now he's got his work cut out against Shabazzian, but I think right now what Brunson needs to do is he needs to be offensive more than anything and get that jab going. I think a lot of times Brunson gets caught in the counter game a little bit, and then he starts just like winging punches when he becomes overwhelmed. But I think if he starts to systematically use his jab along with his great attributes, his fakes and feints, and his ability to look, you know, slick in there, that will keep a young guy like Shabazzian at bay for a bit, you know?
I mean, you know, Derek is a specimen of a human being. He's so athletic. He's so explosive. Like you said, the mental game, a lot of fighters don't understand. And I figured this out as a young boy in the fight game, is that a lot of things are, it's 60-40 for me. 60% is mentally, 40% is physically. I figured this out because I had a training partner back in the day when I was like 15 years old, and we grew up together till you know, till I was in my 20s and eventually moved down here, I used to train with him. And he was a guy that was not super technical. He was not a pretty fighter, but he was vicious and he always won by knockout. And he had a normal job. He worked his night shift and everything, but he was so game. And I learned from it. I watched it because he would come out from a night shift. And this is real talk. And this is the mentality that I'm missing, you know, because that's how I grew up. He came out from his night shift, pack his shit, and drive to the arena himself, go out against a top 10 opponent and knock them out. And that was all mental, you know. He didn't have this fancy training camp and everything. He was just training, you know, whenever he could. He trained hard and he was game. And mentally, he thought he was invincible, and he came in there to break you and knock you out, you know. So it's 60-40 to me. And you see that with Derek, it's more of a mental thing than anything else, because he has everything else. You know, he's explosive. He's super strong. He's fast. So he just has to go in there and use all of that and put himself in a mental state that he's like, you know what? Screw it. I'm going to knock this guy out. I'm going to put the pressure on him, and I'm not going to let this young kid come in here and take my W.
All right, moving down the ladder, we have in a co-main event, Joanne Calderwood, who's stepping in. You know, she's a number one contender, and she's not going to sit and wait on the sidelines any longer. And she's going against a Jennifer Maya. Great matchup, and hats off to Calderwood, as I was saying. You know, a lot of fighters in her position would have been like, hey, let me wait and let me get this title shot. But she wants to stay active, and we've seen – in the age of the pandemic, you know, staying active, being an active fighter is where it's, you know, this is paying off huge dividends. And moving down, we have Vincent Luque versus Randy Brown. Vincente, very, very tough fight against Randy Brown. Randy Brown's a really, really tough fight, a long fighter, long stretched out fighter, great range, great promise, great explosive ability, a lot of belief in himself. And then we have Londo Venado versus Bobby Green, a rematch. Both these guys are in great position because they kind of like have went on similar paths since their last fight. So this fight has a lot of implication because it determines what trajectory they're going to go. Are they going to go and be the guy who's fighting the gatekeeper role, or are they going to start moving ahead and start getting some better fights? And then we have the Kevin Holland and Trevor Giles. Kevin Holland stepping in on short notice to fight Trevor Giles. Trevor Giles is supposed to fight Pac, but he couldn't get into the country for visa issues. But now we have Kevin Holland. And I think that is kind of – that fight is a tougher fight for Trevor Giles than he originally had. Kevin Holland is a very tough fighter, extremely long, extremely tough. So it's going to be a long night out. Tyrone, you got anything on the fight night?
Yeah, I like the Vicente Luque fight. I think it's going to be a very entertaining fight. He's never in a boring fight. Just look at his track record. Always brings it. A very complete fighter. His striking and his grappling on point. I like Kevin Holland as well. Very young, promising prospect. I just think it's going to be a very entertaining night of fights again. And we got to be thankful for the UFC putting on these shows for us to enjoy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Tyrone, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on this podcast today, and thank you for joining us. Where could the people find you?
Thank you guys for having me. The guys can follow me. All the people can follow me on my Instagram or Twitter. It's at Tyrone_Spong. And that's Tyrone with an E. So, you know, I just missed a call from my coach. Maybe he has a fight. I don't know. I'm going to call and find out.
All right. Hopefully you got some good news next time we talk back with you. But for me and Tyrone, we are out. And as we say, as my boy BC would say, we got two words. We out.
We out, boy.
Greetings, Fantasy Warriors. I'm Heath Cummings, your guide to fantasy dominance on FFT Dynasty. Join me this offseason where mock drafts become epic showdowns and every pick shapes your legacy.
If I was Adam, with the team that he's built, Will Levis makes so much more sense.
And that's not all. We're peeling back the curtain on the future with our exclusive 2024 NFL Draft Prospect Profiles. Uncover hidden gems that'll elevate your roster to legendary status.
Puka Nacua. After Cooper Kupp, we really have no idea who's going to get the targets.
Keaton Mitchell of East Carolina. Explosive speed is ridiculous.
This isn't just a podcast. It's a playbook for champions. Subscribe to FFT Dynasty now, and together we'll conquer the fantasy football frontier. Your dynasty journey starts here.